get started, Yvonne, could you call roll, please?
Yeah. Steve Blair.
Here.
Linda Craighead.
Here.
Martha Dexter, absent. Rena Dubin.
Dubin.
Martin Gomez.
Here.
Elise Granada.
Here.
Yolanda Henry, absent. Nicolara Jansens.
Here.
Tara Martin.
Here.
Teresa Tomei.
Here. Thank you. I'm following the agenda that Susan sent out earlier this week. The next item is additional materials. I know that Susan had some materials that she wanted to present to the committee. And if anyone else has materials to circulate, please do so now.
There are print copies in front of you of your meeting minutes. There was a question about some of the basic statistics around the downtown branch library. There was a question about demographics of Santa Cruz County. So this is several data sheets about demographics. There was a request from a member of the public. Judy Grunstra had sent you a digital copy of a potential survey we could use. And I wanted to just have it in print and make it available to the public. And is there something else done at the end of the... Oh, there's also the tech plan, the library's tech plan. So as we do the strategic plan, we follow it up with a detailed tech plan, which is the longer document. And what are those cards on the end of the table, Yvonne?
These are...
From the mob?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I brought some by some exhibition.
And so, do you want to just explain?
Sure. So next first Friday, we're opening a pretty incredible exhibition called Lost Childhoods. It's an exhibition all about foster youth of Santa Cruz County, and it was all made with foster youth of Santa Cruz County. So it's a long 6-month process that's culminating in this incredible exhibition, pretty incredible stories of and objects of the foster youth. So I really encourage you to come by for first Friday.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, of course.
Does anyone else have materials to distribute to the committee? Okay. Additions and deletions to the agenda. Before we do that, I'd just like to ask the audience if there's anyone, just in terms of managing time, because I know the tour is going to take a lot of time, in terms of managing the time that we have, if you know that you're planning to make comments tonight, could you just give us a show of hands so we get a count and see how much time to allocate?
Wow.
Okay, well, thank you. And
there was one proposal to create a section on the agenda for committee members' additions. I know that a lot of committee members are doing research and visiting libraries. I know Martha Dexter is going to the American Library Association in Chicago, and to just maybe allow some time for people to do reports. If you're comfortable with that, we could add that today to the agenda and in the future to the agenda formally.
Susan, you mentioned that to me earlier this week also, and I'm wondering if you know, based on what you just said earlier about how the tour took a long time, and it's going to probably take even longer with a lot of new people asking new questions, maybe we should do reports from committee members starting next session.
Would that be okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would it be helpful to write it out and then so that it's presented?
I think that's a great idea.
That's a great idea. It goes into an official record there and is reflected. But we are taking brief minutes if people have an oral report.
So since you suggested it, I'd like to make a motion that we add reports from committee members to the general business every session starting next week, starting next session, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a second for that?
I'll second it.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. The motion passes. Yvonne, if you would note that, please. Thanks. And, I'd like to ask Susan to provide a report that she's prepared for us also.
I just...
Approval. Yeah.
Oh, I skipped that. I'm sorry.
I apologize.
I'm not following my own agenda here.
It's okay.
Yvonne, could you ask for an approval of the...
You can do it yourself.
I can do that?
Yeah. Okay. But we need a motion and a second.
I'll move to approve the minutes as submitted.
Okay. All right. All in favor of approving the minutes that were circulated earlier?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Motion passes.
I missed who seconded.
Elise.
May I say one thing about the minutes? I appreciate that you put the public comments. I appreciate you put the name and what the comments were for the record.
Yeah, that's great. So, Susan, could you do your report now, please?
Again, I'm going to do this briefly. What I'm trying not to do is overwhelm you with data. Ultimately, the decisions you have to make are really going to be at a high level, but I want to make sure that you have the information that you need to put a recommendation forward. So, and I should have stapled these, but my copying skills, something you decided, it's 5 pages long. I'm passing out a brief... presentation I did to the staff last fall. What I really wanted to show you was this site called Transforming Libraries Future Trends. It's a website. It's interactive. It's not a printable website. It's run by the American Library Association, and it's really future focusing, looking at what trends are happening in our society that they think are going to have an impact on libraries. And I pulled out a few examples, and I think I'll just pull one out. One of the trends is fast casual, and it just has sort of a one-pager that on that website defines what fast casual means. Very specifically, it gets into the idea that people have more money now than they do time, and sort of the overwhelming need that younger people in particular have for things to be convenient. And as a library, how do we think about our services when what our customers want are fast and casual? And so it's a really helpful website. These are some of the things I picked out. There's another piece in here about sort of the power of big data. In California, they did purchase access to a marketing database. And I asked a very basic question of it, because we still haven't totally figured out how to manage the use of it. It's very complicated. But what I really wanted to know is, does our usership cross all income lines? Because we don't ask our patrons about their incomes. What this does is takes patron addresses and applies it to a marketing database and basically asks that same question. And there is a chart in there that really does show that the Santa Cruz Public Library are used pretty widely at many income levels. We're serving both low-income people and affluent people, which is a data point that I've never, ever been able to prove, and it's really an interesting and exciting data point. But that data, that big data that's out there also has some really tremendous power to tell us a lot more about who's using libraries and who's not using libraries. And it gets into customer segmentation. This is really sort of contrary to the culture of where libraries have been. We've tended to really believe that we don't want to know a lot about our patrons, and we don't want to know a lot about how our patrons are using the libraries. We collect very little data. But I think it's an interesting trend in our society, and sort of beginning to talk about how that kind of trend can affect libraries. So I put that before you. If you're interested, I have the list of the total number of trends. You can see they're covering a lot of trends on the site. I encourage you to look at it. If you don't, I don't think it will limit your ability to make decisions with this committee, but for those who are interested, I think you might find it interesting. I also think on the website they do examples of what libraries are doing in that particular area, so you can see how libraries are adapting to those trends. And it's kind of interesting. Next time, as we go to Los Gatos, we're really going to start, you know, today we're talking about the present, but we're really going to start talking about the future of libraries. And so I think this is sort of a nice baseline to look at before we go, because really what the architects are going to be working with us on is how are those trends reflected in architecture and programs and services? And it's sort of an interesting set of questions. So I'll move on from that because of limits of time.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Steve.
So now I'd like to ask Nolan Tam, who I didn't get a chance to speak with earlier, but I'd like to ask you to introduce yourselves and maybe give the committee a short summary of what you've done so far and where you are, just so we can catch up to you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Chris Knoll, founding principal with Nolan Tam Architects, and I'm going to be the principal in charge on the job and sort of overall sort of team leader for us. But I've got Trina Goodwin, who's an architect as well, and we're a library programmer and planner in our office. Trina and I work very closely together on all the library projects. We have Eric Skiba, who will be our project manager and sort of keep us on track. And then Jocelyn and Carla are some of our staff members here. So we brought our whole team with us today to get oriented. But Nolan Tam is we're a 35-person architectural firm. We've been around 25 years from Berkeley. And we do all kinds of public work, higher education, and a variety of different things. But the real particular specialization that I lead within the firm, along with Trina, are libraries. We've designed, programmed, and planned over 40 libraries in the last 25 years. And it is something that we just love to do and have immersed ourselves in sort of knowing, you know, as much as we possibly can and constantly updating on where libraries are going, because it's a constantly moving target, what libraries are doing or are going to be doing in the future. And I think, you know, every library that we do is different and new, and it looks, you know, deals with a different community. And what we did 20 years ago designing libraries, I look at now and I go, wow, that is really dated, because it is moving very quickly. And libraries, I think, they're a bellwether for trends in society, I think. I mean, it's such a an institution that embeds itself into sort of the social structure that everybody from all walks of life uses it in different ways, and people are constantly bringing their expectations to a library and expecting a library to respond to them in certain ways. And we can't continue to do business the way, libraries can't continue to do business the way they've done it in the past. They really, you know, even though some of the elements in the past, like there are still books and I think computers and things like that, we need to really think forward as to what libraries want to do. So towards that end, we're going to bring all of our expertise and experience with libraries to bear in thinking about this problem in service of you and you making a decision about what, you know, is going to be the best thing here. We have, in addition to those of us here, we've got Penny Hummel, who is a library program consultant, and she's going to help us analyze sort of demographics and trends, and you know, we're going to work closely with staff to help us kind of come up with some service models and how we might think about, you know, what the new service model is going to be. And we have a cost estimator on our team as well, who's going to help us get, you know, sort of really drill down the costs. There's been a lot of costs that have been floated around in various sort of iterations of various studies. This will be another iteration with a fresh set of eyes, where we're going to also try to get as detailed and accurate as we can about what the cost implications are, because that at the bottom, you know, becomes a fundamental decision factor for you. So we're going to be looking at, I think we have three options that we're considering: renovating this building, building a new building here, and looking at a new library in the parking structure. And we bring a fresh set of eyes to all the work that's been done to date. We, you know, come at it with no preconceptions or expectations. We, you know, want to really give it a sort of an objective approach, and then come up with enough information that we can give to you so you can make a decision. There won't be a design per se. It's going to be more conceptual than that, I think. But it will give you, hopefully, in the end, a good idea about kind of what, you know, what the options are, what they're going to cost. school. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of what we think we're up to, but if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Go ahead, Rena.
Oh, there was something that I had reviewed in here. Was that something that you prepared, or was that a different?
That was one of the previous studies.
That's a previous study. So you're going to just start over. Oh.
We are gathering all of the information. We've gathered quite a bit of it already, and we're still gathering more information because we want as much background information to build on. We don't want to reinvent the wheel and sort of go over ground that's already been gone over. So.
Chris, the tour that we're going to take tonight, have you done a walkthrough of the library already yourselves from an architectural perspective or a structural perspective?
Yes, we did one this afternoon, sort of a pretty thorough one with staff and our whole team, and we went around and looked at all the different elements. I think we opened up every single door in the room. The only place we didn't make it to was the roof. I forgot about that. We ran out of time. So we've looked at everything, and I think we've gotten a pretty good initial impression of kind of what, you know, the conditions are in this building and kind of what might need to go forward with. And the one thing we don't have that we think we probably do want to recommend, we're looking for more information on our sort of a structural assessment of the building. That is an area we don't have. There's no information in the previous studies that we've seen so far. We figure, and Janice, I think, figures that she's going to do a little more digging around, and we're going to try to find something that is going to give us a little more information on that, because at the bottom of any renovation scheme is, you know, how good is the structure, is it worth doing or not, and what the cost would be to keep up the speed. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it, I feel, we've put up enough information just by looking at it that this building's pretty old and pretty tired, and there's not a whole lot within it that is probably worth saving, except for the basic structure of the building. Mm-hmm. Okay. We can go around, and I can show that to you as we walk through, and we'll give you a better sense of the individual, sort of this, that, and the other basis.
And the one thing I just want to say is that we literally signed our contract 2 weeks ago, so this afternoon was the first real opportunity for them to look at the building. So again, I just don't want to ask too much of you with 2 hours. It's a first impression. I think there's more work that needs to get done.
Thanks for pointing that out, and understood.
I just also want to point out that Martine Bernal of the city manager is in the audience. Martine, will you raise your hand? You know, from last time. Thank you for coming. And we have Cynthia Matthews, our former mayor, current city council person, who's been a strong advocate on behalf of the libraries with us tonight as well. So thank you for coming.
So a couple of questions. Other projects that you've done that would be comparable, either on your website, you can take a look at them, or it's some kind of money?
We've done quite a few libraries. One of them are renovation projects. Mm-hmm. And so we've done both renovation and new construction. We haven't done one in a parking garage before, but we'll rise up for a new challenge.
Will you talk about some of your projects?
Sure.
Just name names?
Name names.
Yeah. Can you name customers?
Los Gatos is one that we've done fairly recently. That's one of our more recent constructed projects. We're going to see that in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. It's a small town, but a library that fits into their civic center, and it was a tricky little process to fit it in. It ended up being kind of a very sort of simple form and sort of an elegant solution, I think, to their problem. It's about a 30,000 square foot library, so not quite as big as this one.
Was it cost you
that? That was a long time ago, and then during the recession, so it was about $14 million. But it's hard to compare costs.
Yeah. Yes.
Things have escalated quite a bit since then. Some of our other ones, currently right now, we have one new one in Hayward that's just about to be done. In about 6 months, it'll be finished. And it's kind of our most forward-thinking library, I think. It's going to have this community learning center, and it has a whole new thought approach toward, you know, what does a library do for its community? And there's a lot of spaces in there for education, community activities, two homework centers, major children's and teen area, and square foot of all the bells and whistles.
How big was that?
60,000.
Okay.
It's a bit larger than this. But again, Hayward is a community of about 200,000. We're doing a new library in Half Moon Bay and one in Capitola, which are both Half Moon Bay is in construction. It should also be done in about 6 or 8 months. And what else?
In here.
In Capitola, we're working on right now. We're in the design development phase. We've done branches in San Francisco, a couple branches in Sacramento, a couple branches in Oakland, Morgan Hill.
We did the Morgan Hill
Library, which is sort of simple one, but it has some very innovative concepts. And one of the things it has that's of interest is it has a sort of a large lobby area that can be closed off from the rest of the library. And they call it their express service area so that a single staff person, even Paige, can be there to supervise while people come in, say, a couple hours before opening or maybe a couple hours after opening to get their reserves and check things out and browse some of the collections there and use some computers. And it's sort of an interesting sort of model that they have.
Let me throw out there one other one you might pay attention to, or we might bring up later, is a renovation of the De Anza Community College Library, which is also a concrete older building that we gutted and had to do a structural upgrade and mechanical systems, which would be more in line with what renovating this building would be. So we have a lot of experience if you were on our website on renovations as well.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick follow-up. On the end game for what you're going to be doing for the City of Santa Cruz is put together a program, right?
It's a program
plus
recommendations. I think the sort of evaluation of the three options.
And we might have to lay out enough so that you could get an idea. Well, God, would the children's area have any windows if we went with scheme A, or would we have a low ceiling? Because in this building, we never can get higher in the ceiling or get windows in the middle of the building. So. Enough layout that you could come up with some pros and cons that aren't just cost, that maybe is there, without doing renderings of what exactly it looks like, but is this going to have some real compromises just by the site and how it's laid out?
We've got budgets concerned. I think if we do have a concept that renovates this one or goes into the parking garage, we're going to try to make the best use out of those sort of space, the structure that we have, to bring the natural light in and make it into something that feels like a really forward-thinking library and accounting for all the things that have to happen to make that feel like it's a good space. It's not a compromise to say stay in this building and suffer the same, ignominies that you do in this building. It will be a transformed building that will really stand the test of time and serve you into the future.
I just have one quick question about building on more than two stories onto this. I don't know if that's structurally or if that's okay with the city. Like, has that been talked about?
Because of the age of this building, I think it would be very difficult to consider adding anything above it. Because it would probably require us going into the foundations and reinforcing them. And by the time it got done, sort of reinforcing the structure and the foundations, it might be less expensive just to build a new building. We wanted a four-story building, we could then.
And is the city okay with like a four-story building here? I'm just
I don't know the zoning. I would anticipate that would be way more expensive than what the budget would allow to do a four-story building. Okay. And a two-story occupies 44,000 square feet. A four-story building would be twice as much. I don't think the budget, quite honestly, could accommodate that size. And I think they're right that it would be less expensive to tear down and start from here.
Chris, I have a question for you. Since your firm has done so many libraries, one of the challenges that I'm finding myself is in terms of the services that a modern library offers or could offer. I can imagine things that I would like, and I can ask friends what would you like, and we can visit other libraries and see what types of services they offer. But I'm wondering if, you know, with your vast experience with 40 libraries, if you have some sort of document or summary of the different types of services that those libraries offer that could possibly kickstart our own discussion and our own imagination here.
We sort of have lists in our heads more than we have written down. Everyone is completely different. Every community that we work with is really different. You've got some very particular issues that you're dealing with here that we don't find in, say, suburban Sacramento. You know, they have a wholly different approach to it. So I think there are some basic stuff. I mean, there are things, there are books, and there are reading areas, and there are computers, and there are community meeting rooms, but then there are more specialized spaces. And we're finding that, you know, things like maker spaces are places where things are created, it's become a very big topic. And that could be, you know, whether physical things of all the things you might do in a maker space, which is, you know, pretty much anything you can think of, or it is digital media, you know, looking in a digital media lab in Hayward, which is an audio and a video. Recording areas and things like that. Literacy is still a big, issue for many of our communities, not all of them, but maybe that might be something I can actually, you know, talk about literacy today and what your literacy program is, but it would be interesting to know. So I think it's the kind of thing that we want to hear from you about what your concerns are, you know, what you feel you might be lacking that we could address in the library program, or things that you're doing now that don't work for you. And I think you've got some other, you've got a particular community here. I think there are many elements in it that each one has to be addressed.
I would also say you have to look at the community and sort of the strengths and gaps within the community itself. So, a community without an art museum might have a really different focus on for the library than a community with a strong art program. And it doesn't mean that the library doesn't support the mission of that art program, but you don't have to have a ton of gallery space if you have a lot of gallery space down the block. If you have a Boys and Girls Club, that is a paid program. That's part of the issue. But if you have a Boys and Girls Club down the block, how do you create programs that don't duplicate but enhance sort of the strengths of the community? And that's why every library ends up a little different, because you're looking at where are the gaps in services and then sort of where are the strengths in the community services.
And our library programmer, who couldn't be here tonight, but is going to be coming down later in July to do interviews with library staff, and I'm sure you guys will have an opportunity to meet her, will help discern what some of those needs are. And I think the other element is there is, as you pointed out, Martine, not an open-ended budget. And so it isn't just thinking of all the things that are possible, but prioritizing and deciding what of these things are the choices that are most important.
Understood. Those are good points. I guess I was asking more from a, you know, rather than saying this is a menu and we're going to pick, you know, this one and this one and that one and that one and that one looks really cool, it's just, you know, to kind of kickstart the imagination. And just a few things that you mentioned, you know, they were good examples of the types of services that a library could provide. And so if you have opportunity to suggest any more at some other time, I'd be glad to hear them.
Yeah. We'll do that.
Thanks. Any other questions for Nolan Tam right now? Then I think it's time for the tour.
So I would like to invite James Lee to come forward. James is our branch manager, and James is going to lead. You guys are going to get to hear me over and over and over again. James gets to experience this building operationally every weekend. And I really thought you might enjoy sort of some of the stories that come with the issues of the building. So James is going to lead, and if you could follow him, We want to get it done within an hour, so Janice and I are going to be pushing you along. We can come back and ask more questions. My suggestion is that we limit the questions on the tour to the committee itself. I apologize to the audience, but it is a way to keep it timely and moving. And there will be at the end of this an opportunity for the public to make comments.
And then before everybody gets up, if I could just preface, not a building designer, don't have a construction background or anything related to building maintenance. I've worked really well in libraries. And what I'll be showing you today is going to be kind of the dark underbelly of the library. So some of the issues that we face on a regular basis or have to deal with on a recurring basis. And just to give you an overview, some of the topics that we've been talking about is asbestos in the building, our HVAC heating and cooling system, our electrical and lighting capacity, as well as our capacity to increase our technology infrastructure, plumbing issues, our current restrooms, how the building is in or maybe not in ADA compliance, the elevators in the building, the building's envelope, and what that means is how external factors can impact the inside of the building, so whether it be water, weather, rodents, that type of thing. Sight lines, shelf heights, space allocations, and then just the concept of purposeful architecture. As you guys make really important decisions in the future, there's some really important components we'd like to keep in mind: sustainability, security, accessibility, and just really what the role of the library can be. We're in a really comfortable room right now. This is our largest meeting room throughout the system. It has a 63-person capacity. It's very comfortable because it's got AC. It's one of the only two rooms in the building that does have air conditioning. So let's continue, or let's begin.
Nice to meet you.
Likewise. Okay. So it is a really big group, so I'll be talking really loud. Don't think I'm yelling at you. Libraries have a really valuable role that they can play in being a meeting place for our community. So it's great that we can have a board meeting up here, but it's also a gathering location. I think, really lacking in our capacity to provide that. We've got one meeting room. We don't have evening access. Once the library is closed, meetings have to come to an end. Additionally, we don't have study spaces for group study, private sessions, things of that nature. I'd love to see that in the library.
Meetings stop when the library closes, because of access.
Which can be designed for it. So this is your young people's room, and I apologize for any patrons that I might be disturbing. It's ample, it's passable, but you'll notice a dramatic temperature difference once we enter this room, and we'll talk more about our air conditioning or lack thereof throughout the building. In the heat of summer, there's no distinguishable difference between inside and outside. It feels exactly the same. You'll see box fans are set throughout the room. We provide water because there's no drinking fountain up here. People often get thirsty. The only restrooms on this floor that are open to the public are children's restrooms. So we make them available to the young people that are in this room and their families. There are only two, and it's keyed access. Our teen area, probably about 35 square feet, right over in the corner. We're not going to attract that population unless we provide them a space and things to do and stuff like that. So hopefully keep that in mind, and we'll make some improvements in that area. It's a really vibrant community. It's really, this is how we're going to, for the young readers that we've already touched and already kind of brought them into the library world, they kind of fall off at times. And if we can bring them back as teens, then we're almost guaranteed to develop lifelong readers. You know, I think we're gonna start at the highlights. So we're gonna backtrack. Sorry for that.
Yeah.
So the corridor that we're in now represents our tutoring area. It would be ideal if these were indeed study rooms, if they could be reserved, set aside. You could have a conversation without disturbing your neighbor. So a few things that you can see here, again, study rooms are space for teens. The stair rails that people gain access to were retrofitted to bring them up into ADA compliance. However, they often loosen up. This one was recently repaired, and that can pose a problem. There are two elevators in the building. They're quite out of date. The result of that is that when they do go down, it takes a long, long time for them to get brought back up. Most recently, we thought we were going to lose one of our elevators. The last repair lasted over a month. The impact to the public is that people can't bring their kids up for a story time in the stroller if they don't have an elevator. Someone can't attend one of our very open and public meetings without an elevator if they're in a wheelchair. So there's definitely a direct public or impact to the public. So one of the circuit boards went down, and it was irreplaceable. We didn't know how to make it. Luckily, the repair people are great. They were able to make it, to get it working. But that's a short-term fix, and it's not going to work for us for long. Now we're going to continue right down the corridor. So try not to interrupt anyone who's getting tutoring. Voice only?
Yeah,
okay, we're good.
Voice.
Try not to stutter.
This goes into that meeting room.
This goes into
the staff.
You'll see it from right up.
We're going in. Just
we're going into the underbelly.
So as you cross the precipice here, you're going to notice that the tile has changed. All the 8-inch tiles you see throughout the building are asbestos. We're told that they're fine as long as it's not disturbed. If we ever do find a disruption, we report it immediately, cordon off the area, and it's dealt with. But in remodeling or renovating the existing building, asbestos throughout the building would need to be addressed. The downtown library houses not only all the services we provide to the public and the staff that work here, we're also the home of the Friends of the Santa Cruz Public Library. So this is their sorting area. In the back of this room is our library IT department. Downstairs is collection management services. So they're all definitely well embraced and interrelated with the work of the library, but it also takes up lots and lots of square feet that could be reallocated toward the public or just used in a different purpose.
So this area is Friends.
That from the first row?
From the first row.
That whole side is Friends.
And what they're doing is processing donations for resale.
Mm-hmm. These documents here, have they been scanned?
They're all in the catalog. We're in the process of digitizing them.
And then
we're having some discussions about that. Uh-huh. So if it's the last copy, you digitize it, you get rid of it.
What documents are those?
There's a lot of city documents. There's back issues of magazines, lots of the Sentinel and former newspapers, which we have been digitizing. We have some runs, though, of in particular the newspaper that haven't been digitized that we really have to keep. We also have microfilm and microfiche. You're going into the deep underbelly.
James, you mentioned this was the Friends area and also the internet.
Library IT.
IT.
So the library IT area. So are we going to see the library IT area?
Sure.
We don't have to do it now. I just wanted to make sure.
So we don't have access to the server room.
The shelves are full with our storage collection or archive material.
We're re-identifying the material that we really want to save and hold on to as we prepare for other branches that will be closing during their renovations, so their collections will have a place to land. Not a whole lot to see in Library IT. It's a server room. It's got DC. I've been in there once.
He's been in there once.
Two big cages. So
tech services.
And then we have the telecom there. And they do all of the tech services for all 10 libraries. And we have fiber to the building.
Susan, does your IT work with the city and county, or are you independent?
We are an independent IT shop. I mean, we work with them, but we're our own network.
Okay.
And it's really because we can get Scenic, which brings fiber to our buildings, and we're eligible, and those entities are not. So that really creates an advantage for being independent.
Can you share some administrative systems, like the financial system, the payroll system?
All our overhead really is through the city.
Yeah, okay, so there's that integration.
But procurement of equipment and the software is through the city?
We use their purchasing system, yes.
System. Okay.
But our ILS, and we have our own network with the 10 libraries.
Who's your ILS?
Polaris.
Okay. So right here is basically storage.
So what we've been doing is honestly getting rid of some of our things, and what we're trying to do is clear out enough space so that when Capitola closes, we're going to take some of their hot items and we'll put it out in the other branches, but some of the stuff that doesn't circulate as much we'll put in here. We can pull it if we need to, so it'll still be a part of the circulating collection, but it gives it a place. And we'll have to do that with Felton. Well, I don't think we'll have to do that with Felton because they're moving to a new branch. But as Aptos, we'll have to do that as well.
And we're really thoughtful about the material that we decided to merge. We ran an assessment over 3 months to identify that people were actually requesting these materials, and nothing that had been requested is being merged.
Give me an example of what you're purging.
1965 Time Life.
Makes sense.
1938 So you don't want my 1950s Time Life magazine?
We probably have one still. All right, here comes the good part. So these tiles are safe, 12-inch tiles.
That's just regular foam stuff.
That is regular.
No,
well,
no fiber.
It was
in
used
there.
To as a sealant after the 1989 earthquake.
Yes.
It's safe.
Okay.
And you get in here.
I can even do the one that she's talking about.
So you probably won't be able to hear me too well once we get in there. This is our boiler room. It also contains our ventilation system. It's a airflow system, not a air conditioning system. But come on, take a look. You might find it in here.
Oh, yeah. Don't miss this.
So this is representative of the condition of the pipes in the building. You'll find several locations as we continue the tour where leaks have occurred. Material has been damaged or made inaccessible to the rest of the public. Sure. Not too far. We're going to open some more stuff up.
We got all asbestos up there.
I think it's just popcorn. No, that was the sealant that they used when they did the asbestos abatement. That's the sealant they use when they conduct the asbestos abatement after the earthquake in 89. So the boiler that's making a lot of noise behind you, 2 winters ago it broke down. There was a $17,000 repair. Our other option was a $50,000 replacement. As it stands now, what we use to operate it, the fuses are so old for this machine that they have to cannibalize an unused fuse in order to plug it in to where it's needed. Because they can't purchase those fuses. Right in this door, I'm probably going to have to take turns to take a peek. So these are the louvers that govern the airflow throughout the building. They are original. I'm told that they work. I can't prove it. They're supposed to open as cool air is needed in the building, and they're supposed to close as the boiler turns on to stop the warm air from escaping.
And do they?
Go on.
Well, we were up here this afternoon, and nothing was open.
But there's no control anywhere in the building.
It's controlled by this.
Uh-huh.
Don't ask me how.
Yeah.
Not in building maintenance.
So the city building maintenance people know how to...
Well, our building maintenance is like our library staff. So they're library building maintenance workers. Generally, for any types of repairs of this nature, we go to a professional. Have a vendor come in.
So it gets cleaned all the time, and so the air is fresh.
You can tell yourself that.
She held her breath the whole time.
If it makes you feel better, sure.
Go on in. Those
are loopers. So those, the rest of the parts, that's what's supposed to open up.
So is this the water heater? I've missed the
oil.
No, there's nothing. I was trying to find out what was in here. I couldn't see Raina.
So this is the air ventilation system. It's not an air conditioning system. It just allows, hopefully, cool air to come in and prevents hot air from escaping over here.
Yeah.
All of
our
thank you. Like this?
No. We've updated it.
Okay.
Mostly because we've gotten a lot of grants to do the
careful
energy.
Yeah. Did everybody prepare?
Go ahead, I'll shut it from that.
Well, we did get distracted with some art and
discovery. Immersive.
She denies a ring. We renovate
Did you get a chance to see that?
Not to my knowledge, but I'm not.
Yeah. It seems like an awful lot of money.
Okay.
Wow. So if you ever come visit the library and you're not perfectly comfortable, that might be why. Everybody saw the pipes that were in there, right?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. So I'm going to show you something else, and then later on it'll make a little more sense.
See, he's mysterious.
So this is our building maintenance room. This is where they store their material, where they plan the work that they're going to do each week. Right inside that closet is a janitor sink that had been unused for a couple of decades. I didn't even know it was...
Can you repeat? I didn't hear it.
So this is our building maintenance room.
Oh,
they store their supplies, plan their week's work. But right in this closet is a janitor's sink. We didn't realize it existed, or at least I didn't, until the janitors began to use it. When we found that the pipes were already broken. And then later on, you'll see what the impact was to our collection and to our paper.
Yeah, that's like safety things, like an eyewash station or things like that, you know?
Do we have them?
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Is that required?
It is not. In fact, as a library, we're not even required to provide public restrooms.
Are you kidding me?
No way.
You've seen it. You've done
really?
It.
We do so, and as such, we're then also required to provide ADA restrooms, which we do so, but I don't know if an auditor came through or someone who was assessing our compliance, if we'd actually pass. And we'll show you why.
James, is that by law or is that by practice?
Which, the restrooms?
Yes.
Any facility that provides public restrooms must also provide ADA restrooms.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the other part. Public restrooms in the public library.
Required.
That's illegal?
Correct. Mm-hmm. We're legally not obligated to provide public restrooms.
That's fascinating.
I find that really hard to believe in California.
Yeah, children coming in.
So, is there a maintenance staff in the building? Is it a full-time?
We have three full-time maintenance workers, but they're responsible for the entire library system, not just this building.
Uh-huh.
So they service all 10 branches.
And where are they based?
Right here.
Right here.
You found it.
Okay.
That's one of the functions of this branch.
Oh, there it is. That's up there. It's a
long branch. It has all these systems functions.
How is the roof?
Are housed out of here.
Never been.
Which is why this place is bigger.
No,
it's assessed.
Yes. Several roof repairs have been conducted. I've not seen any leaks from rain, but I have some issues related to the gutter system due to heavy water buildup. And the gutter starts to bend. But we have the gutters clean regularly. Just the storms are such that we blow more debris than we can pick up.
But the facilities, assessment was done at all the libraries. So it's pretty thorough.
Okay.
Right.
I've seen the facility master plan.
It's an assessment.
Take your word for it.
The facilities assessment of all the branches.
Yeah. What do you got? Does that mean? I reviewed the master plan. I haven't been too busy.
It was done, though.
Yeah. Yeah. The heat transfer. We just see the heat transfer. Yeah. Yeah. So you get fire right now. Heat seven.
Come on, go ahead. Let's go. Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm going to be here.
I'm sorry.
So here we're at the staff elevator. It's equally reliable. If anyone likes to take it down, you're welcome. Too many staff refrain from the use of the elevator. How long we do it if I'm on the clock? The stairs leading down are also made of asbestos. And they keep telling us that as long as they're intact, that they're perfectly safe. However, you'll see erosion that occurs on a regular basis based on usage. So keep your eye on it on your way down. So just take a look.
Should we go down one at a time?
No one's
tripping. Hold your breath.
When it is right
now. An office space.
That's where the lit division manager. I think that's her main office.
Now we're back to Aiden and Tyler.
I guess we must have enough regulations.
I rewrote our evacuation plan and requested a review from risk management. They weren't available to provide that. For the fire department, though, we're getting. Oh, you like that? Thank you.
Are all these bathrooms utilized?
They're staff restrooms.
Right.
We've got over 80 staff in the building.
And okay.
We do have five restrooms.
Okay.
So we get along really well.
Okay.
Okay, so back this way. This is our collection management services, also referred to as tech services. So depending on which one you're familiar with it. So I know that the abatement process was completed back in 1990 after the earthquake. When I arrived 2.5 years ago, this area was all plastic taped off because there was more asbestos in the building that I guess as they reconfigured things, more came to the surface. We've got drop ceilings throughout the building, so our only way of adding additional electrical outlets, power supplies, data drops, is through these types of conduits. They are professionally installed, so they ensure that our breaker systems aren't overloaded, however, just barely. During a recent winter when the boiler was out, we plugged in a portable heater at the service desk, blew out the power to half the building. That same portable heater works just fine anywhere else, but where we tried to plug it in, it didn't have the capacity for it. So just another allocation of space could be utilized differently, but they perform really valuable work here. We don't get books on the shelf unless they do their job, so they definitely need a place to work.
How many people work here?
I want to say it's a staff of 14.
It's that's full system wide.
I believe so. They might have 130-hour work.
Chief, you said there were the building supports 80 staff members.
How many people are here simultaneously? Is that 80 typically on a business day?
Probably don't have 80 people at any given point. We're open 7 days a week. From staff arrive as early as 7 a.m. and we don't close until 8. Mm-hmm. So there's some fluidity through that. As far as overall people in the building, we register over 1,000 people a day through the doors. Now, that may be 200 people that have come in and out 5 times. People can't distinguish that. But we have definitely people that utilize our services from the time we open till the time we close. Mm-hmm. So the first guy that walks in the door can often be the same guy who's the last one to walk out. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna go into the heart of the library. And again, I'm going to create a disturbance. Private folks, it's going to be a brief disturbance, and I apologize in advance. So just act like we're not here if you can. So welcome to the downtown library. What you will notice is just that aesthetically, there's issues with our carpeting. There's issues with the ceilings, our lighting, even though it was very new 30 years ago. It's so out of date that at this point... He does a great job, doesn't he?
Wait, is this Southwest Airlines? 8 o'clock,
So even though the lighting was new 30 years ago, technology has advanced such that we can't upgrade to energy efficiency. The lighting we receive is poor. The ballasts regularly burn out or are in back order. And light's really important in the library. But the library doesn't just run on the love of reading, people's ability to read, or their love of knowledge. These days it runs on power. So currently we have 19 public PCs with internet capability. They all are connected to our print release stations. We've got color, black and white. We've made some innovations. So we have an actual sign-up station where instead of putting your name on the list and talking with your neighbor about whose turn it is, it makes you an actual reservation. Yvonne used to be one of our techies, so he knows the concerns all too well. We have charging stations available, so if someone comes in with their device and bring their cord, they have the ability to charge it up. But then there's also other steps that are being taken. Right now we have 19 public PCs. We're slotted to add between 15 and 20 more in the very near future. So we already have the electricity installed. We have the data drops in place. We're just waiting on the equipment to arrive.
Lighting cannot be upgraded?
Not according to our building maintenance guys. They said that we need total different lighting system, including ballasts, in order to install new bulbs that are more energy efficient.
You can bring electricity to each of the locations.
I believe we can.
You can use those for an LED or other system that would be optimized.
Oh, okay. I think actually the architects that were here, they called out these lights by name. Did I hear that right?
Are they here now?
Yes, sir.
I thought we weren't asking questions on the tour just to keep the timeline going.
Yeah, I'd just like to remind everyone that we had asked for just the committee members to ask questions during the tour. The public is welcome to ask questions afterwards.
And again,
just for time purposes.
No construction background, so I can't even speak to your question. I just know.
Ignore it.
So the leak that I showed you up in the gutter thing came out right here. It impacted 80% of our DVD collection. What was left, I mean, we implemented our solvent process, so we were able to save almost everything. What was still left and on the shelves was inaccessible because we had to cordon off the area. So then for over a week, before we were able to get things dried out, cleaned up, put back in place, and then re-accessible, nobody was able to borrow our DVDs, and that's one of our most popular items.
Okay.
opinions.
May I ask just really quickly about, you have Wi-Fi throughout the building, and then is the do you have public PCs upstairs, too?
There are children's PCs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They're restricted to young adults' use. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, young person's use. Mm-hmm. But everything down here can be used by anyone.
How many are upstairs?
Seven.
You mentioned charging stations. Are the charging stations available?
Take a look at one.
That are available to the public, are they just in the PC area, or are they distributed throughout?
Well, there's a couple of varieties. There's a quick charging station. We've got those installed strategically throughout the library. Mm-hmm. The newest device we have are charging stations that provide their own plug. So someone can walk in just with their device and have the ability to charge it up. Yeah. I'm going to take you to the one over the side here. So outlets are a really, really valuable resource. Probably the second most valuable resource we provide aside from bathrooms. but you'll see that the outlets that are available aren't necessarily related to the workstations. So when people set up at these tables, they can't plug in their devices on the wall because they're draped across the aisle. And you'll see that consistent throughout the library. Wherever we do have an outlet, we try to make the most use of it. So these are the quick charging power station, quick chargers I was referring to. They'll accept a plug from any type of device. So if you got the newest iPhone or the oldest flip phone, you'll still be able to plug in there. Mm-hmm. Because of the lack of availability of electric outlets, we created what we call a Wi-Fi cafe. So additional work surfaces along with a variety of power strips so that you can come and plug in whatever you like and hope they have some space to work. Mm-hmm. The black device there on the top, that's the charging station that provides the cords. It's what we call technology eye candy. Provides a valuable resource, looks really good, at least before the graffiti.
Okay.
Moving on. The shelf height that you'll see throughout the building, they're about 8 feet high. 8 feet to me, sorry. The industry standard is about 5 feet. It creates additional line sights throughout the building so staff can see what's going on. They can identify if a patron has a question or if something's going on that shouldn't. And it's also more aesthetically pleasing. When I arrived, the top shelf was set to this height. We kind of reallocated all the shelf height so we can bring it down. It felt really claustrophobic. Over in our mystery section, that has yet to happen. So you'll get a sense for that as we walk through it, what it feels like, how the whole environment changes. Our windows are great. They're floor to ceiling. They're single pane, so they break often. They're really expensive to repair. But they also let in lots of natural light. That'll be experienced even more so if we're able to reduce our shelf heights. Therefore, more that light can get into the heart of the building. Mm-hmm.
And we have tried to, it's also hard for especially seniors to get to the bottom shelf. Mm-hmm. So we're also trying to manage what people find comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, we moved everything on this side of the building. Not related to building maintenance issue or building concerns, but our large site material used to be sandwiched between two other micro collections. That's been moved up to the front for easier access. Our nonfiction used to be segregated depending on the size of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were looking for a book on literature and it was this big, it'd be in one place. But if it was this big, mm-hmm. it'd be shelved elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So we adjusted all the shelf heights so material of the same subject can live in the same place.
And are the shelves empty because you're moving things around?
Which shelves? That's the only
bay
that's empty.
On the sides and over here.
So those used to be used as sorting shelves.
Sorting.
Staff were touching items 5 times between the time it got returned and the time it made its way to the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Once to check it in, once to put it on a cart, from the cart to that shelf, from that shelf to another cart, from that cart to where it lived.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of expedited that process. Items are shelved the same day. The assessment I made, it took 5 to 7 days for an item to get reshelved where it was supposed to be with our old process. So we're trying to refine some of our workflows. You guys will have a big part in that as you design how we're going to receive our incoming material, where it's processed, where it comes out to the floor. That has a huge impact on how efficient we're able to actually operate. How am I on time? I don't remember
what
I
tried
to do.
Sorry.
You said it 6 things.
You're good.
You're good.
You're zooming.
In response to, is that why the shelves are empty? Probably related to a shelf allocation. We didn't get rid of books. We also moved our reference collection right up to the front of the building where our reference staff work. Sounded logical to have staff there with the ability to refer people to that material.
Good evening.
you guys are swamped. I'm going to lose them, huh? Sorry.
Can I ask a reference question?
Sure.
Long term, the question of how much of that material is available online versus in the encyclopedias and books, is that a subject that's...
is a collection where you keep producing. Because it's available.
Yeah.
And it comes out of date. When you check out your book on your favorite planet...
Right.
And it's not a planet
Pluto,
anymore?
Not Pluto.
That's right.
Yes and no.
So that's the type of thing we have to keep up to date with. So here is our mystery collection. These shelf heights have already been allocated. It lets in so much more light and has just such a better feel to it. So we're not all going to be able to fit into an aisle. But if I could get everybody to walk down this aisle and then walk back through this aisle where the shelves haven't been resized.
So much.
And let me know if you can feel a difference.
Same thing. Excuse me. I came through here yesterday and noticed the same thing
that
you're pointing out about the, you know, the shelf heights and the lower shelves in the mystery section.
The feel of it, I guess.
You're doing a great job. It's looking
it's
so
great,
nice.
Great.
We're making steps forward, but there's only so much we can do.
Of course.
I know patrons are always, patrons, staff, and the public, everybody's concerned about our collection. They don't want us to get rid of books.
Mm-hmm.
One of our goals, though, is to make material accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you overpack the shelf, and you can't see the forest through the trees, people aren't going to find their items, our circulations go down, people are less likely to browse our collection.
Mm-hmm.
They'll exclusively reserve materials because it's easier to find.
Are we going to go in the bathrooms?
Let's.
I think we should. I'm looking forward to the bathroom.
You instigator.
Okay, so
I'm
going to
go in the bathroom.
Come on in, there's room for everybody.
Here we go.
You know, I've seen this bathroom many times.
You don't want to go in again, huh?
Well, you know, I just want someone who hasn't had a chance to see it to experience it in all its glory. Go ahead.
Watch your step. Actually, it's pretty good today to be after 6 o'clock. Generally, by this time of day, it needs to be closed out of service. Either based on misuse, people bathing in here, the plumbing that's pretty bad, backing up or clogging, illegal drug use, lots of other issues. But the biggest issue for me is even at full functionality, when everything's going perfect, there's not enough. Again, 1,000 people a day through the door. Some are here all day. Some are here exclusively because we have public restrooms. If you do an assessment throughout the city, I think Bookshop Santa Cruz?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's some Florida there. Oh, do they? Nice.
Yeah.
I'll start sending people over there. we got one stall and one urinal for men. The stall door is probably where I get most of my complaints. I reduced its height.
Yeah.
There have been too many occurrences of people overdosing in the restroom.
Mm-hmm.
Again, really valuable resource. When that's made unavailable because someone has almost killed themselves, there's a huge impact to the public. So I didn't just go off my own. The parking structure on Locust Street, that's the same exact height as their stall door.
So if you added more space, you'd have more men's rooms. Larger men's rooms with more urinals.
Sure, my wish list would be a building that's built to the sidewalk with exterior restrooms. It could be the responsibility of the city or the parking structure, something that takes the library staff out of it. If it were up to me, our motto would be Santa Cruz Public Library. Really good at books, not so good at bathrooms.
Well, this building could be remodeled to add exterior restrooms as well.
Very possibly. I think that's why we're here, is to discuss those options. Women's restroom about the same size. It's got two stalls, no urinals. Big surprise. What you will note, though, is that neither restroom has the footprint to be for us to expand it to include more facilities. What are they called?
Stalls.
Right. Appliances.
Fixtures.
There we go. That's what I
mean.
Additional fixtures, or even to widen up for us to make it ADA compliant. Again, we're providing public restrooms, so we have an obligation to provide ADA restrooms as well. Mm. Let me show you what we've, how we've made that work.
So if you walk by, this starts.
No comment about that.
So the carpets, you'll see right now you're walking on concrete. Mm-hmm. The idea was for us to pull up all the carpet during a two-day period. We signed the contract, we had the vendors come out. This is how much they were able to get done. Because they were so stuck to the ground, they had to scrape it off.
Oh, wow.
So this is as far as they were able to go. We decided to seal it and cover it and paint it. So it's slick resistant. Mm-hmm. It's easy to clean, mm-hmm. Which is actually necessary during this particular corridor. Mm-hmm. As we go through, take a look at the tiles in our CERC office. You'll see that they are also 8 inches.
Those the asbestos tiles? Yes.
That's correct. Restroom in use? Do you have the key to the restroom? If you have it, that's fine. I don't need it. So in addition to being the home for library IT, library collection management services, building maintenance, friends of the library, we also have the Genealogical Society of Santa Cruz County. They do great work, very interested population, very dedicated volunteers. So there's questions that come up here that couldn't be answered without their help. They've also got their own collection of materials that do not circulate. They are available in our catalog, but we don't own them. So you can see them, but you can only come here to use them.
They have their own staff or it's library staff?
Volunteers.
It's all volunteer run.
All volunteer.
And it's a very well-run organization. They do a lot of programs like, you know, research on your house, introductory to ancestry.com. So they've been just a great partner for us. Mm-hmm. And again, because there isn't a formal historical society, I know that the MA does do some history. This seems like a good fit for us. One great thing about history is people who are interested in this kind of work really learn to use a library. Mm-hmm. And so I think the partnership together is really a good thing. I hope we can continue it.
Mm-hmm. Susan, don't you need, like, for special collections, of, like, special rooms that will maintain some of these old documents?
Well, so one of the things we want to do is, while you're meeting, we're going to meet with all these groups. We'll probably bring them in to you as well. And we have one person on staff, she's at the desk tonight, who kind of specializes in this. And we have to talk about what we can achieve and what we can't achieve. So there, you know, climate control is important. I'm not sure we're really set up for truly valuable resources. There are libraries that aren't often experience significant theft. So we really have to, I think, come to an understanding about what we're going to collect and in what way we're going to collect it. Some of this can be digitized. And so that's another solution for us. But I suspect inevitably there will be this kind of research space in the library. It's very popular. I apologize. We just extended our hours on June 1st from 7 to 8 o'clock at night. So we don't yet have our customer base, but this is a very popular room. People like the quiet space as well. So I can envision this working well in the new library. It is a regional resource. We get calls from, you know, Idaho saying, my grandma grew up, so.
Is there any reciprocal between this section and UCSC Library? Any connection between them? Because it'd be a good resource sharing.
We like each other.
I think there's informal relationships. I don't know the extent to which it's formal. Mm-hmm. We do interlibrary loan, so we can... But we tend to go to public libraries first. Mm-hmm. So let me research that a little more and get back to you.
And so many of you, I'm sure, are really familiar with the services library offer. You might also be familiar with the library can't do everything. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we find ourselves in a position where it's really hard to say no. Or it's something we really want to do. That doesn't necessarily mean we have the resources for it. So somebody mentioned special collections and the conditions that that room has to have. Mm-hmm. So humidity control, dust control. Not present necessarily in this building. On that note, though, we've got a variety of different collections. You all saw the storage and archive material. This is our Californiana collection. Around the corner, there's locked case material that's even more rare and less in production or accessible. We've also got a local history room. which is so mysterious that I just showed a staff person who's been here 5 years today for the first time, where that room was. My issue with that is that we're a public library, and this material should be out in the public and available to them. I love the fact that we have it, but let's not keep it under lock and key. And it's literally under lock and key.
And where is that? That's on that side of the building.
Oh, right by the Wi-Fi cafe.
This is this lock. Uh-huh. Yeah, the catalog room.
You also see the file cabinets. Those are filled with microfiche. We've also got the most high-tech, up-to-date microfiche readers available.
Wow. Is there much added to this on a regular basis?
Regular, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
You know, I do know
Yes. So one of the missions of libraries is that there's a finite number of shelf space, and we always want to buy good books. In order to do so, you have to conduct deselection. Once an item has checked out a certain number of times, it's probably worn out. If it's not checking out at all, we call it dead, meaning it's just taking up space on your shelf. Because we have a floating collection, that doesn't just mean that nobody walked into our door to want that book.
You have to be part of this branch. Or is that kind of the expectation? Well, it's a very sophisticated question in a way. As we went and did our strategic plan, a lot of the local branches said we want to have more of our local stuff back in our libraries.
Do you have other artifacts or objects?
So I think that is part of
not in California, but in local history we do. My favorite is the Sanborn map.
An extent to which we're
You're familiar with it.
And any art and other objects?
Not so much as, there is some artwork. There's art, there's aerial photographs, there's topography, there's Veterans History Project DVDs. A wide variety of material.
Okay.
As far as art goes, we're part of a regular art display. So every 3 months, the art rotates throughout the building. In the very near future, we're going to be installing a hanger system just to simplify the process and to ensure that we're giving up that same amount of linear feet each time for artists. So now I'm going to need a volunteer from the committee.
You want the bathroom or open it?
Open the door. So it's an ADA restroom. What I'm trying to identify is the weight of that door. Imagine if you were in a wheelchair, trying to push that door open. So this used to be our children's room. It's been reallocated and repurposed. Quite heavy. I think we'd probably be deemed if there's a compliance assessment done. Took note of the size of the toilet. That's a children's toilet.
Yes.
We cannot change it out. And excuse me, not a technical expert or construction guy. Building maintenance has informed me that the diameter for the inlet pipe is smaller than what's used in today's standards. So we can't even change out that toilet unless we replumb the entire wall and everything leading to it. It's a children's toilet. In order to bring it into ADA compliance, they have to install a riser. The market-ready risers that you find will not bring that up into ADA compliance. So they have to make one. The problem with that is that it loosens on a regular basis, and those that need that added support or stability find it to be a safety issue, and I agree. It is, however, large enough to meet the dimensions for ADA compliance. Sure. That part of it is.
Oh, okay.
It's 60-inch diameter.
What has to be fixed periodically?
The riser on the toilet, so it's a children's toilet, this high.
Mm-hmm.
ADA compliance says that your toilet has to be higher than even standard toilet.
Okay, so you put a fixture on it.
Okay, we need to move on. The chairman.
Thank you.
So replace the plate.
Should we
Okay.
Wow.
So it took. Do you want to go outside or is it nice?
Yes.
I hope it lasts.
10 minutes. We can make this work. So sight lines. You talk about shelf heights? I would love it if somebody could tell me where I should put my service desk, because where it stands now, I can't see every inch of the building. There's, in fact, I can see less of the building than what I cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've made assessments throughout the building, there's no better place. So there's no vantage point that gives us a greater visibility of what's going on in our building. I know security shouldn't be our first concern, but in order to create a welcoming and safe environment, it is something that has to be on our radar. So on that note, let's take a walk outside.
I'm having two desks.
Excuse me.
My favorite shopping sight in town.
So, James, I don't need to say it.
Oh, you're not.
She got you.
I appreciate it.
And I got her.
So again, welcome to the Santa Cruz Public Library. It looks great from the outside. We've got a wonderful facade. One of my concerns, though, is related to a concept called defensive architecture. And that's a really hot topic these days. There's buzzwords to it. There are public facilities in England where they're putting spikes into their pavement so people can't lay down. There are fences going up at the post office that people have huge objection to, and I understand. One of our goals is to create a welcoming environment, not just for one demographic, but for all. So the patrons we serve need really clear guidelines about what our expectations are. As a result, we've partnered with the City of Santa Cruz and created City Hall campus guidelines that governs the activities that are permissible outside the library. We've also reworked our internal code of conduct, which governs behaviors that are permissible inside the library. It's not easy conversations to have. It's going to be a lot of work for us to move forward with these and enforce these rules, or rather, let me rephrase that, to advise the public as to our policies. But every effort we make is going to be a step forward. Every time we inform a patron of the little things that they can't do while they're here, the less likely they are to do the big things that we're dealing with on a regular basis. But while we're out here and talking about, I don't like defensive architecture. I like purposeful design. So if we want a place for people to sit, let's create a place for people to sit. If we want people to be able to get by on our sidewalk, let's make sure that that's not the same place. And that's what we're experiencing now. So we're looking at removing benches. I would love the idea of building the building out to the sidewalk. I also like the idea of exterior restrooms, but that's just me. Some other concerns about the exterior of the building. When it rains, the gutter system, it bows. It dips and divots to the point where it appears to be a safety issue. There's also, like, they lose the water that comes out from that little spot. At the base of the building, where you see the downspout, it's supposed to go into a gutter drain. Those gutter drains are... They don't function. In fact, there's not even an outlet on the street where you would see them come out. So I'm sure they're great 50 years ago, but they serve us no purpose now, and the property regularly floods. What those gutter drains are used for are road use. So on a regular basis, we are impacted by rodent sightings as well as evidence of rodents.
You just saw one?
Yeah.
Just
now?
Yeah. We've had professionals come out and advise us and even suggested regular reoccurring treatments. The only response they have is the two inlets into the building. And as a public building, we are not allowed to use chemicals for a patient.
Not allowed to what?
Use chemicals or poisons. So they've been able to give us no solutions. They've encouraged staff to be uber conscious about their use of food and snacks.
The library cat.
Only if it's a service
animal. There you go.
What's that? Sounds like a great idea.
Suggested that?
Pardon me?
Clearing the drains mechanically.
I've been in communication with professionals. They're providing me suggestions.
And they're telling you that they can't be cleared.
Okay, again, we're not asking questions right now. Let's move on.
So I think that's just about my time. We'll meet back upstairs, and I think there's 30 minutes left for some discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You were awesome.
Thank you. I thought it was wonderful. Make up your mind.
You're charming. And you care deeply as
well. If anyone wishes to take the elevator, by all means, we'll see you tomorrow.
No, I've been in there with my kids. They realize it's no fun.
It makes weird sounds.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Susan, these paintings are so beautiful.
Aren't they, though? There are some really magnificent pieces.
Yeah,
in the library. But I love some of the real old ones. I don't know anything about them, so I need to learn that. I just know something about them to the point. Can I look at the brown bag series? Woohoo!
Aww.
Let me give it a try.
Is there anything?
Yeah. I have the wonder key. Are you jealous?
Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Do those restrooms require a key to get in?
I believe it, and if you have a restroom, you can. But
there's a trauma.
We don't have restrictions. I'm just going to have all the adults that come up. Yeah.
Where's Miss Tomei's role?
She's a committee member.
Okay, next up on the agenda is a report back on first impressions. I'd like to hear from the committee members first, and then we've already had a slight chance to hear from Noel and Tam, but then some other, some elaborations from Noel and Tam. So I'll open it to the committee now.
I just want to say before we get into too many details that I really appreciate the time and information and resource, and that I hope we rely on the people who use the space, and that I hope that all of us can be respectful of those people and allow everyone to listen and be heard before we get into the complicated conversations that will eventually happen. But I just honor the time that it took all of the staff to walk us through that. So I want to just acknowledge that before we start throwing out our ideas.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
I'll start.
Please do.
You know, I was thinking as I walked through the library that I'm in the library every week. Mm-hmm. You know, I read like crazy. But I order books, I reserve books online, I walk in the door, I go to the whole shelf, get my book, check it out at the entrance. So I never get back in to the whole part of the library. So it was like getting to know the library all over again tonight with this walkthrough. Thank you. I think that what I'm really going to look for is when you start working on the building program with the staff, and I mean how valuable it was to hear from you and how you see the overview of the library and what the needs are and what all the staff is going to come back with, because they're the people that are in the library every day. I had been to the Watsonville Library years ago, and I went, you know, a couple weeks ago to look at the Watsonville Library, and it's like night and day. I didn't realize, you know, I've been thinking, this library's in really bad shape. You know, what the needs are, what the community needs are, what the staff needs are, and whatever option we end up with, it's a lot of work down there, and it's really kind of surprising to me that the community that we live in doesn't have available to them just basic things like the kids for study rooms, or, you know, all the computer access, the electricity, you know, the circuit breaking, I mean, the power that comes into this library. So it was very eye-opening for me. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Rena?
What's fascinating to me was just to realize, like, I always avoided the downstairs corner, but it's just with the windows is so beautiful. Like, there's so many lovely things about this, and just realizing, like, if it was restructured, just how seems like a lot of inefficient use of space. But on the other hand, like, the asbestos is alarming, and the plumbing is alarming, and, you know, there's just some really... Seems like the electricity, just the basic bones. So, you know, I'm really interested to see what the cost difference is, you know, because it does seem like there's more to work with than I had expected. And then on the other hand, just, you know, how much would it take to really make this a safe building for the public that, you know, safe in 20 years and 30 years without flooding and things like that seem really important to consider.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Who else has comments?
I guess the first impression is a lot of deferred maintenance here, and that, you know, I don't know, you know, where to point the finger, but it's years and years of deferred maintenance that it shows. And I guess the question that raises for me is, when you go forward with a new building, are we going to be in the same situation in 10 years, 15 years? Where is parking currently? Is it street parking? Is it lot parking? And what's the vision for parking going on? Do you have that as a question? The place is... the seating, and, you know, it's functional, but it also seems to be very uncomfortable, very, you know, unwelcoming, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm also curious about kind of the functions that have to be here versus those that may not have to be here. And, you know, I'm not trying to pick sides here, but, you know, tech services, do they need to be in this building? A meeting and study spaces, you know, what's the market like in the area here? Friends in the library. I mean, you don't want to get along with the friends. Don't get but you know, they're taking a large footprint with their storage and with their shop. And then the genealogy folks, it's another nonprofit group, I guess. And, you know, so how do you balance those things? I think at some point we're going to have a discussion about helping you hear from us about some of those priorities. And then, you know, I think the trend nowadays is for a lot of libraries is really open concept. And I didn't really feel like there was a lot of open space here. It was like one chamber to the next and one little, you know, hallway to the next. So it'd be nice if we can open up the space.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was my concern too, that it wasn't, you know, from standing there at the desk, at the front desk, it's just looking out. It's not welcoming at all. It's not inviting. It's, you know, doesn't. I don't blame you for not going to the back section. You know? I mean, and just going to the front and checking your book out. But I was interested in the special. Well, they're not special collections, but the Californiana and the genealogy, and you know, that would be, that could really be displayed if we had the facility or the room to do that, to have the history of Santa Cruz County and California being displayed so that we can see it and, you know, of course, change periodically. But I think, yeah, to hear that there's resources that are locked away, you know, that's concerning too.
Anyone else on the committee have comments?
Can I ask?
Teresa, please.
There's a real lack of community meeting space in the downtown, mm-hmm. and I know the library, this room is heavily used, and because it's also one of the free of charge spaces for events for which there's no cost. So for being kind of the community's living room, right where we're sitting, it's really hard to get to. You have to go through corridors and turn corners and make the elevator work, so there's a very steep stairwell. And, you know, it's not, you don't walk into the library and go, oh, here's my community room. It's like, where in the hell is it? How do I get up there? So that's one thing that I've noticed with usage. Mm-hmm. It's just the circuitous access to the room.
And if there was access, it could be open when the library was closed, mm-hmm. which would be a boon to the community.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question of the library staff? That so there's currently 19 public PCs and 7 up on the kids areas with 15 to 20 more coming. What's the vision for where those new ones are going right now? Are you congregating them? Are you wanting to spread them out?
We're congregating them on a series of study tables between the desks. There's sort of the central desk and the tech desk, and there was. You know, they're not ergonomically really created for that, but it's where we're going to put it in the short run. I would say that a shortage of PC availability is a source of conflict in the library. At least where I came from, we actually provided a lot more public PC access. I think we have 150 total across the entire system. My library system was in a similar size service area. We have one library with 150. So I get that there's this conversion to more other devices, and we really did see this drop, but we're seeing this surge back, and we talked about this last time with this usage of the phone and that becoming people's only device, they still need a place with a PC and a printer.
So just to add to that, the footprint that we've established for the new PCs is a much smaller footprint, so we'll be able to accommodate the quantities that have been ordered. We've already designated which tables they'll go on, and they're in close proximity to the tech aid, as well as the print release station, to ensure that they'll be well supported. The library I came from was 31,000 square feet, and we had 60 public PCs just for adult access, a separate collection for teens, and then a separate collection for children.
Tack on to that, because you mentioned when we were in the children's area, you also mentioned the teens and how, you know, how do you attract teens with what you have. And I would think that, I know that the children's, the young, the elementary school, there's huge demand there. I have a grandson that's up here all the time. But in terms of study space, tutor space, teens, middle school, high school, you're so close and there's so much, there's so many family homes in this whole area all the way to the water.
And schools.
It would be a huge, huge draw.
And one of the things that we typically see, and I don't necessarily see here, is there's usually a lot of junior high school students who use public libraries as an after-school space.
Yes.
We also have a lot of homeschoolers in the community, and they're looking for spaces in the library.
And there's no place here for them to feel, you know, when you're a teen, that it is your space and you can't settle into it without all the other little kids.
Mm-hmm. And all the wisdom is you never have it next to a kid's room. Right. Because they don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Los Gatos actually has a really interesting teen space and a huge volume of young people. So that will be an interesting thing to look at.
I'm sorry, Nicolara.
I was definitely a bit shocked seeing some of the behind the scenes infrastructure to see just, you know, how antiquated some of the airflow things were, and you know, how, you know, not being able to fix the elevator circuitry. I mean, that's just not something you generally think about when you're coming in to check out the book. But it was interesting to hear about, you know, the reconfiguration of some of the book spaces. I mean, I have appreciated being out in the stacks and no longer having the large books segregated from the regular nonfiction books. I mean, it's like, oh, I looked for this book. Oh, it's not this section. We have to go to the large print. So I really appreciate that reconfiguration. I have noticed, though, sometimes, like, in the stacks, the study spaces being so close to the stacks sometimes is a little uncomfortable when you're trying to look through a section and there's somebody who's sitting in a chair, like, 2 feet from the book that you want to access. So maybe just something to kind of, like, think about for future design is, like, you know, it's one thing to have quiet study spaces, but it's another thing when somebody's actually trying to pursue and kind of browse the books instead of just getting there and getting your book and leaving. And then the bathroom's definitely a huge issue. But somebody who, you know, lives and walks a lot downtown, it's very, very important to have public access. Because when you're trip chaining and it's like the library is one of my stops and it's a nice safe space to use the public restroom, when I go on to another few places, I'm not just getting in my car and driving home, but I have another 3 errands to run in the next hour. It's a bit, you know, very nice to have a public restroom that I feel safe to come in and be able to use. So I would definitely like to, you know, see that the public library continues to offer public restrooms.
Quick question for Susan or James. Do we need to be out of this room at 8 p.m. when the library closes, or do we have the option to extend the meeting?
I'll talk to the boss. We can probably make it happen. but I think that does require a unanimous vote by the committee.
Because your ground rule is same.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to know whether the option was even available. So thank you.
We can make it happen.
Teresa.
Let me ask a question about security. I didn't hear anything about security. And I know I've seen drug use in the restroom, and I know that there is a real element to that really turns off a lot of patrons from coming in. And I was just wondering, what is the library doing for security?
And my suggestion is we put that as an agenda item on a future agenda, because I think it's a lengthy conversation, and it does have have an implication for the design of the building. So I'll make sure that become an agenda item, and we'll do, because it's multiple layers, and
I realize it's a complicated, sensitive subject.
But it's...
It does really affect kind of our overall...
I don't think there's any way around it.
Yeah.
I just want to echo some of the points that were made about the open space layout, also in the library. I'm kind of struck walking in how there's not, reading your strategic plan and all the great work that's been done by the staff support and community, it doesn't feel like that energy is really reflected, even just in kind of the branding and colors and language of the signage and everything, or highlighting the great resources like the charging stations and, they feel kind of like, if you happen upon them, that's when you find them. So just kind of echoing some of the comments about that and thinking about branding and especially with these upstairs spaces too, how we're going to be connecting these spaces in the future. And then also the point about the actual, the interactive spaces, I just remember reading about that and how there's that desire for the quiet space for people to be able to read and study, but then also the interactive space potentially for teens. And I found myself kind of thinking about, okay, where would that go, while we were walking through the building and thinking about the storage area we're walking through and sound safety and all that stuff. So it's going to be exciting to see where we want to lay that out.
I would just like to add on to that, too, because one thing that struck me when I was at the Watsonville Library, I was there at 3:30, 4 o'clock, and it was after school, and there were a lot of kids in the library. And they are two-story. They've got it divided with the kids down below and the adults up above. And they had an activity area, and it was going. And they were doing an arts and crafts project. And when I was upstairs, I could hear it, So it made a big impact from downstairs to upstairs. And I know that as I read through the plan for the library over in the other part, in the parking lot, one of the things I thought was, okay, well, if it's all one floor, there's great pluses to that, but there's also minuses depending upon how the area is broken up in terms of activity areas, which I think are really valuable, and how the sound works in a situation like that.
Go ahead, Rena.
Oh, okay. I've been talking with them. I just wanted to encourage everyone to go to the Scotts Valley Library because it's really well used by middle schoolers particularly. And there's also no place if you actually want to, they have a beautiful outside place. You can, be outside. There's a little porch area, balcony area. It's really lovely. And I've tried to study with my kids there and do some actual real, intense studying. There is really no place to do that. And they have the study rooms and they're not soundproof. And it's just, it's a really lovely building that addresses the community. It's very well loved and used. And it's also, as a library and the way we think of libraries, the more introverted part of being in a library, it's very difficult, so it's just something to throw out to go by there and check it out.
I think it's a very fair assessment, and people love that library, but it is the single largest criticism. Mm-hmm. We didn't succeed.
I have two comments to make. One on the division of space and the lighting. Just the overwhelming impression that I had was just the space just. It's continuous and it just goes on and on and on from one section to another. There's no real division of space. Like, if you think of a big box store or a modern grocery store, they have, the little bakery nook and the organic veggies nook and, everything's kind of broken up to make it a little bit more intimate and less of a big box effect. And it's, something to think about. We don't necessarily want to segment nonfiction into different categories, but maybe it's a thought to pull some sections of nonfiction, let's say of art history, out and put it into a single section on a rotating basis, and it sits there for a month where it's very visible and accessible, and then next month maybe it's something else. And
So there's, you know, a lot of games you can play with space, and then the lighting, lighting is so important to really make a welcoming atmosphere, and a number of people talked about a welcoming atmosphere, and the windows downstairs are beautiful if you can get to them. If you can get within sight of them, it's really nice, but the natural light is blocked off. And in this building, you know, it will continue to be blocked off. So if this building were to be reused, the artificial lighting becomes extremely important to help make it a more welcoming space. And then my second comment, I should have written down because it's gone. It'll come back later. There are many things that, you know, that I could say about this, but I really wanted to focus on two, and I can only think of one right now. I'd like to cut off the committee comments right now. I think we've heard from everyone or almost everyone, and ask our architectural firm for maybe 5 minutes. Could you spend 5 minutes and give us second impressions?
You guys all were very perceptive and touched on a bunch of really interesting topics, and I kind of was thinking each one, like, yeah, what would we do about that? And yes, what would we do about that? I mean, some of the really basic things, like, you know, electrical, for James, you know, plug in a heater and blow out half the building. The building's only got 800 amps of power coming into it. That just is not enough. It needs more, even with a more energy efficient, you know, kind of solution. I think that lighting is something that really could be improved to make it feel more welcoming, whether it's more natural lighting, which would be nice, and that involves either sort of lowering the shelving and reducing things and opening up pathways to what's already there, I think, or possibly, depending on the structural capacity, opening up more wall panels and having more light coming in from the outside. So this could be something really good. Or possibly opening up something that comes down in the center of the building. Again, the structure would allow it, the budget would allow it. It would be nice to bring some light down into that central portion of the building. And I think that would go toward, you know, get to that welcoming issue as well. How do you make it feel welcoming? Light, clarity, views, and organization really makes places feel welcoming. So, you know, that first impression that you come in, being able to see down and then have things that happen off of that would be a nice way of reorganizing the building and making it feel like, you know, it's a place where you want to come to and you know you can find things and you're not going to trip over things you don't want to find. There's so many different things.
You know, one of the things I would really love to do is kind of go through this list, and it'd be great in Los Gatos if you could say this is how this building addresses this problem or doesn't address this problem. I think that would be a sort of useful tool for us to see how we can achieve these things.
I guess I just would like to point out that, you know, I don't know where you all are coming from in terms of size. There were some initial comments before we took the tour about, you know, could we add on to this building? How could we get more? And I think one of the things on the tour was really realizing that there is a lot of space in this building. You know, when you walk around, there is a lot here, and that maybe we could reclaim a lot of that space, and, you know, if we really clear things out and reorganize it, that there's, you know, some real possibilities to really start kind of from scratch reworking. And despite the fact that there are all these mechanical and surface finish issues throughout the whole building, there's still a fair amount of space that has some potential here.
You know, in terms of size, too, you were saying that Los Gatos is 35,000 square feet.
30,000.
And we're talking here about 44, and the one in the parking lot was looking like 40. I would really appreciate, you know, if when we're looking at other libraries we could visit, and you give us some suggestions. I mean, you've given us quite a few, but if you could kind of divine which ones are about 40,000 square feet, because if we come back into this building or even the new building, that's what we're looking at, you know, in terms of what we've got. So if when we're out there looking in terms of comparison, it would be, I'd really like to see other libraries that are about that size, see how they're configured and what they've done.
We can pull that from California statistics. Mm-hmm. So we'll just go do a quick search.
A little bit of a unique size. You know, there's a lot of branch libraries that are in that 12 to 20,000 square foot range, and a lot of downtown big public libraries are 60, 100,000. Yeah. You know, it's a little bit of an in-between size, so it's hard to come up with exactly apples to apples.
The other piece is, do you have an IT shop? Do you have... So this is the central admin we did not look at tonight. I promise we will, but we were worried about time and wanted to focus on this. But, you know, what's in it and what's outside of it? So those are some questions we'll have to face. But it's part of the programming process.
A good portion of the 44,000 is taken up with staff and administrative space, and which possibly could be consolidated and free up a lot more space. I mean, that would be one of our top priorities, is looking at how much space can we reclaim. Make more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Quick question. Who is in the offices over on, is it Locust Street? How many staff are over there?
You mean the administrative space in the water building?
Yes.
I need to count. I'll go do that. But we'll actually walk through it.
Yeah.
But it's admin, a whole series of the librarians. Our programming support team, marketing, our volunteer program, the Friends administrative office, that's their bookstore office. So there's, we were in about 14,000 square feet. I think we shrunk about four recently because we moved a bunch of staff out to the branches. So we'll have to look at that. Again, I think there may be room for efficiencies.
So that's plus.
That's plus.
Yeah.
But we don't have to move the administrative piece. This is sort of an option that we can look at. Mm-hmm. We may want to move on to public comment.
Before we do, I'd like to suggest that we extend the meeting optionally as late as 8:25. That would give a full 30 minutes for public comment, which we had asked, which we had suggested before. If we do not need the 30 minutes, we'll end early. We will limit public comments to 3 minutes as we have in the past. Would someone like to make a motion to that extent?
Move it.
Second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The motion's passed. Thank you. Sir, I think you're ready to make a public comment. And before you do that, I'd just like to ask about procedure. We had asked in the past that people who were going to speak sign up with Yvonne. Is that what we're doing, or will we just take?
Just one person say they wanted to.
At the beginning, we only had one person.
Okay.
I guess there are a couple, though, so.
May I ask a question before we get to public comment?
Okay.
I'm just wondering if there's anything that we should do to prepare for next meeting, specifically?
That'll be the final thing we do.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Okay, so, sir, you wanted to speak.
Well, I'll defer to the lady if she is prior.
Actually, right. I think Jean had said she wanted to first.
Is somebody else going to speak? I'll do 3 minutes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In fact, just about everything I had planned to say tonight, I'm not going to, after seeing the tour. This was, like Linda said, a real eye-opener. I do want to make three comments for the committee to hear, and also for the architect to hear, because I know they're listening to the public too. I absolutely agree with what Rena said. Everyone knows, or if you're a sound mechanic, sound rises. And whether we stay in this building and remodel, restore, resurface, rebuild, re-inhabit, or build a new one here,
The one thing that I like that this building has going for it right now is that the busyness happens upstairs automatically. Downstairs is a quiet place for contemplation, study, research, and it's up here where the children are and where the community meetings are. So that's a nice situation already in terms of it doesn't have to be designed there. Whether we stay here or redo this, I think that's very important to keep the busyness upstairs. Even if you make part of the busyness a little outdoor patio. This is Santa Cruz, not Minnesota. We could have some outdoors about 300 days of the year. I also think it's not a good idea. Well, let me be positive. I think it is a good idea. Now it's going to have to be negative. Not to duplicate what we already have. We have a museum of art and history. And it has been rebuilt with a lot of money and a lot of effort to become a community center, a place where, and it's only 2.5 blocks away, so they already have a lot of the history of California, the history of Santa Cruz. That's already here. I don't think we have to duplicate that here. And it also has art history there. So let's not let's spend our money wisely and not duplicate. If we don't need two automobiles, let's only buy one. Books. One thing that I noticed, because I am a reader, and I've been coming to this library since 1979, and when I was, how old was I in 1979? 35, I think. As an adult, not as a child. The books are the key in my mind's eye. I counted downstairs, James, when you walk into the library, if you do have to use the bathroom, which I will use, you pass, oh, is that the 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to say very quickly, I counted.
You can have 30 seconds.
These were the books to be that people were going to pick up with the little tags in them. 460 books waiting for patrons. So I just wanted to say this. Thank you.
Thanks.
Did
you want to speak?
I mean, myself.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to respond to some comments that were made earlier before the tour.
Sir, could you introduce yourself?
Oh, my name is Michael Lewis. I'm a museum curator and archaeologist, so I have that perspective. I've helped design two major international archaeology museums. So I've worked with buildings much, much, much older than this one, but I understand what's going on here. However, for the moment, I want, and this ties in with museum curation as well. The comment was made that museums are a bellwether for trends in society, and I started writing an article while we were waiting for the museum to start. And it's titled, Are Libraries the Wave or the Ocean? And it's one thing, a perspective I'd like you to keep in mind is that the library, the collections in the library, and the building itself are part of the cultural continuity of our community. If you have studied the history of the library system in Santa Cruz, you'll understand that this place right here was once the original library building. It was a Carnegie Library building, and it was torn down in 1966, or 68. This building was built in 68. And that had its own continuity with the culture of that time. There's a long history that the library went through before it occupied that building, and then in 1968 it was torn down, and some people think that's a tragedy, and I'm among them because it was a gorgeous building. We have the history of our community, our community culture, the demographics of our community are all built into the collections and the building itself. And so when you contemplate changing that, whether it is remodeling this building or tearing this building down and building a new one, or putting the building into a retail space underneath the parking garage, think what that does in terms of culture and in terms of the cultural continuity. What is that? What will the new building, whatever its incarnation will be, what will it say about our community? And what will it say about our community's past? And what will it tell our children who come here about their past, their history, in terms of the history of the building that they're coming into? So, and I think that ties in, too, with the archives and special collections as well. Though we would love to have them readily available and out on shelves for people to look at and see, they have very special requirements for handling, for management, and they actually should be in a different place rather than in the main library here, because they're extremely valuable. They're our history, and we want to make... And the other thing is, despite all the electronic materials you have, the only archival material there is ink on paper. If we digitize everything and throw away the ink on paper, it will be gone. I guarantee you it'll be gone in 50 years because electronics are not archival.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Colonel Michael Maxwell, and I know something about the Library of Congress and had some involvement with it, it's coincidentally. I also know about government spending money, other people's money, the taxpayers' money. And it's extremely easy for government, of which this is a government activity, to waste the taxpayers' money. It is also easy for government, especially people on periodic meeting committees, to be bamboozled and fooled by architects, by builders, by bond underwriters, and by not so honest people in the position of county supervisors and city council members. Happens all the time across this country. I'm curious, what is the cost the architects have proposed for the proposed building? What is the cost the architects have proposed to remodel and renovate this one, add additional space? Next, how much did I hear that's 40,000 square feet here now, 44,000? And the new proposed library would be less than 40,000? Would you answer all five of those questions, please?
I don't think this is a question and answer point.
Sure it is. It's appropriate to clarify. Is the 40,000
sir, if you submit those, we'll get them answered and sent to you.
You can't let the architect?
I can have the architect answer. But this isn't the appropriate time for that.
Those numbers were mentioned.
And I'll clarify them at a later date.
So the new proposed facility will have less floor space than this one does now.
We don't know the answer to that. This is what the study...
He said that earlier. He contrasted the numbers. 44,000 presently here and less than 40,000, if I heard correctly, in the proposed facility.
I think that I was the one that said that. I don't know that it was the architects. And I think, you know, it's just a pre-estimate. I don't think there are anything right. hard and vast in that figure. So I think we're so early in this process that maybe those questions can't be answered right at this time.
And rather than asking the architect to just speak off the top of their head, maybe we, you know, it's a fine idea to just, we've documented those questions, and then we'll have the architectural firm will have a chance to provide the correct and accurate information.
So, Ms. Nimitz, should I deliver my,
please,
pursuant to California state statutes, my public records request to you?
That would be great. Thank you. I think Judy wants to.
Thank you. Judy, please introduce yourself. And
Judy Grunstra. Yeah, I heard the word prioritizing and compromise, and I think obviously that's what's going to happen. You know, there's the trends mentioned. I don't even know what badging is, but... you know, virtual reality, maker spaces, I mean, they sound, you know, right now very trendy. And I think with those things, you're constantly having to upgrade your equipment to the latest and greatest. It's like a never-ending, you know, money hole. And if you don't have the latest, patrons get mad, you know. So that's one thing maybe we'll have to compromise on. That kind of thing, or maybe mock and provide that sort of, you know, service to the community. Mr. Gomez mentioned, I think an important part, what really has to be in this building. Do you want your administrative offices here? You know, maybe that's the most efficient thing, I don't know. And the genealogy collection, maybe they could, you know, it's a volunteer run, you said, so maybe Ma has a library, and they are the Museum of Art and History, so maybe those materials could, you know, be consolidated somehow. Let's see what else. Rena spoke about why not go up four stories, and maybe on the Measure S money, that can't happen, but maybe city offices could go up above. I mean, I believe the city rents about 23,000 square feet of spaces in other buildings downtown, park and rec, finance, and water. So if you want to be efficient, just, you know, go up a little higher with this building. And I guess everyone talked about a welcoming atmosphere. The garage isn't going to have that. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in from the community that would care to speak? Okay, so we'll move on to a preparation for the next meeting and for the Scottish Library visit. And I see in the agenda that I did go out of order, so I apologize. We should have done that first. Before we talk about the Los Gatos visit, last time we spoke about a rotating chair for this meeting, and it's rotated to me for the first time. Would one of the other people like to volunteer for the next one?
You've done such a good job.
I had a good coach. So. Thank you.
So who's the next chair for the next meeting?
Any volunteers?
Are there, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. Besides being
And then I did have someone express an interest in potentially getting a van and carpooling. Is anyone interested in that? So I'll work on that and send some things out via email. Again, you're welcome to drive by yourself as well.
I can fit 7 people, including myself.
We're all coming with you, Ray. So we'll work on that. Thank you.
And I'll be in San Jose. I work in San Jose, so I'll be coming directly from San Jose in the other direction. If anyone happens to be over the hill, once you ride, please reach out to me.
And the public will be welcome at that meeting, so please feel invited.
Okay, so we have a chair for next time.
Are they expected at 6 o'clock on the call?
Yes.
6 o'clock at Los Gatos?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay. And is there a meeting?
There's a tour and a meeting.
Yes. They're arranging the tour, and then we have a place to meet.
I see. So we'll go to the large meeting room there. Mm-hmm. At the beginning?
This will be the unique thing about Los Gatos is chose not to put any meeting rooms in the building. So this is something we need to talk about. But so there is a place where we'll have a meeting. Mm-hmm.
So there's a place where we will assemble.
But if you assemble,
we will not lose you.
Tell me where to be.
If you could just come to the front entry, there is a reception desk.
Okay.
And a coffee cart. So.
Assemble at front entrance, 6 p.m. All right, and. Susan, maybe you know more about this than me. Is there any other preparation that we should do for the meeting next time?
The thing I would encourage you to do is go to the website that I provided to you and just look at the trends. Some of them I think are more relevant than others. Some you may reject altogether, but I think it's an interesting exercise in thinking about where we're going and what that impact is on my work. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have time, that's fine. I think the building itself will speak to a lot of the trends. But the things that we felt were missing from this building, I think in many ways are addressed in that building. Again, they made decisions not to do meeting rooms. It became a financial choice for them. And that, to me, has a dramatic impact on the programs and services they can offer. So I think that's something we should talk about. Ultimately, we're going to get to the point as a group where we're making some difficult choices. And I think in Los Gatos, it plays out. You can see one of the very difficult choices they chose to make. And how they're providing, I mean, their accommodation to that is also interesting.
Mm-hmm. I was going to suggest that if you go on the website for Los Gatos Library, take a look at some of the background information they have on the website, hopefully available, give you a good overview. Was that a bond issue library, or was that totally funded by the city town of Los Gatos?
Redevelopment funds.
Redevelopment funds.
Last
but you have to pay off those bonds. Even on redevelopment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And with that,
I think we
Okay. We need a motion.
I'd like to second that motion. All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Aye.
Who moves?
Opposed?